Are you feeling a little dry today, Andrew? Are you feeling a little dry?
A little dry, but...
I'm feeling a little dry.
You feeling a little dry? Maybe need a little fluids.
I think I need a little fluids.
Welcome back to Questioning Medicine. This is Andrew Bilt down here in sunny St. Petersburg, Florida.
And I'm Joe Weatherly, and I am soaking up... apparently the wrong fluid. Mine's got 23 original, authentic blend of 23 flavors.
Drinking the salt water, huh?
Might not be salt water, but it sure is delish.
Delish. All right, so last week we talked about fluids. What's good? Which one? Normal saline, lactated ringers. Talk about some of the trials around it. Maybe myth bust a little bit of... maybe hopefully get you to question... are you only grabbing for normal saline? Are you only riding for normal saline? And if so, why? Today, how much to give? When to give? Does it matter if you give a lot or if you give a little or if you give any amount? And I think this one has come to me maybe a little close to home because I have heard way too many physicians, too many of my colleagues that say, I don't care how much fluid you have to give them. I'll just take it off later. Just... keep their pressure up. I don't care how much fluid you have to give them. You know, keep them whatever the next statement may be. And they just pound fluids. And these patients end up looking like the Michelin Man. Just swollen. They've put on 20 kilograms of weight. They've got plus 5 pitting edema because there's no plus 6. It's awful. So that's what today is going to be about. We're going to talk about fluids. How much to give and when. And hopefully, you know, by the end of this, I know last year there was a shortage of normal saline. It was kind of a big deal. And by the end of this, hopefully going into flu season and going into the winter season where hospital census tend to be at their peaks, there will not be a shortage this year because we'll be using fluids appropriately.
A little more of a campfire medicine kind of guy, where I sit out way beyond the right or the left and worry about weird things. Do you think that those fluid shortages are conspiracies by the big pharma trying to bilk the man? So that way, I mean, what's normal saline, right? I mean, right? one of the nephrologists that we follow on Twitter, Joel Toff, he goes home and makes his own.
That's right. I mean, how
can we run out of that crap? I mean, it's basic everyday ingredients, probably boiled, heated to make it quote unquote sterile, put inside a plastic baggie and sent to us for a 500% markup. How can you ever run out of that?
Well, if you want, we should start making it, because then we could just...
I know I'm going to tweet Joel Toff every time I run out and just have him send me some, and I'll pay him 500% markup. And the man will retire shortly thereafter and just spend his life on Twitter laughing it off as he burns money to keep himself warm in the Arctic northern climate he lives in.
Michigan?
Yeah, it's freezing up there, man.
It is cold.
Compared to Florida, those guys actually have to have fireplaces and heaters and stuff like that.
I think what describes most physicians, I'm going to quote this from Chess 2008, says, we advocate that fluid boluses be considered critically rather than simply being giving reflexively. And I think too many are just giving it reflexively, and we need to kind of reconsider, does this patient even need fluids? I mean, everyone that comes into the ER even gets a bag of fluids. You just come in the ER, you've bought yourself a bag of fluids. But do you really need it? Get into the hospital. You probably get at least a liter of some kind of fluids. Do you really need it?
Yeah, that's definitely a good question. And I think there have been two schools of thought that I've really enjoyed listening to. And that's the one by John Myberg.
Yeah.
He's a fluids guru that I could listen to all day just because of his accent and his language. But and then the other is Scott Weingart. And just listening to them discuss whether or not, you know, what exactly early goal-directed therapy is and how much and who and when and how you assess if somebody's hypovolemic, I think is one of the best discussions that doesn't get discussed enough. But yeah, we should definitely consider, I mean, like you said, if they come in, they get a leader, period. If they get the label of sepsis, early goal-directed therapy starts per protocol, but then I don't think it stops.
That's the problem, is it doesn't necessarily stop. And I think the Rivers trial was great, and it got us talking about finding these sick patients, starting this early goal-directed therapy, giving them fluids. I know that Weingart has a podcast talking about the STOP collaborative they did up in New York City, stopping sepsis and trying to put an end to it. I think the exact number is 22% absolute reduction in mortality, which is great. I mean, those are all wonderful things, but all too often, it doesn't stop. It just, we start early goal-directed therapy, and they get lots of fluid, you know, in the first 6 hours or whatever your therapy, whatever your protocol is based on at your hospital, and then they just keep getting fluids for the next 66 hours, and then things tend to go the other direction.
Yeah, and I think that's really where almost all of the great minds meet. Even those that are like maybe more towards the Myberg school of thought, where they're like, I think a liter and a half to 2 liters in 90% of my patients is plenty, no matter what their diagnosis is.
Did you hear his most recent podcast where he said the fluid in sepsis is Levofed?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That was a smack. That was smack, a smack, yeah, conference. Yeah. Absolutely. Just finished that this morning.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a great. That's a little controversial. It's probably a little bit. Again, he's going campfire medicine at that point because he's not even on the right or the left wing. He's off the campus entirely. But I mean, I agree with him. I mean, there's probably in a lot of patients they do okay, but then you get towards. And I don't want to say Scott Weingart is the champion of the give all the fluid you can, because he's not.
No,
but
at all.
Just to give a reasonable amount of fluid, which is somewhere between the craziness we've been doing and somewhere between that and Myberg, somewhere in there is what he's probably more for. And it's patient to patient. You know, one that's sepsis from pneumonia, they might not need as much. Sepsis because of perforated viscus and a massive, you know, maybe not blood loss, but volume loss. All right. Or C. diff colitis, where they've been pooping their guts out for a week and a half, 20 times a day. They're going to need more fluids. And then, you know, I think the clinical, which is amazing, that clinical exam doesn't really come into any of these studies. Like, they're measuring CVP. They're doing inferior vena cava collapse.
Right.
They're doing all the echo. You know, that's another great critical care tool. But none of them are doing, like, capillary refill or tachypnea, you know, or, like, pitting edema or crackles on lung exam. I mean, that doesn't even enter the realm of something I care about in any of these discussions, either because it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to have crackles if they're plus 12 liters and they had heart failure before, they've now got crackles. I don't need to check that. Or maybe because it's so low yield. So we're not good clinically at walking in and saying, egats, this patient is clearly hypovolemic. We must immediately resuscitate them. No, we look at the labs and we say, oh, it turns out he's sepsis. Oh, wait, severe sepsis. Therefore, he gets 6 liters. He didn't look it, but he gets it.
At SMAC, Weingart talks about how him and Paul Merrick, might have slaughtered that, but how they've had discussions over the last year or so about what's best for fluid, and they've come to agreement somewhere upon 2 to 3 liters is probably about enough, and then, you know, start pressors. And at SMAC, Paul comes up on stage and he says, you know, you sort of look at the patient. If the patient's septic from, you know, urosepsis, then do they really need fluid? I mean, is that why are they septic? Do they necessarily need fluid even? You know, do they need, maybe they just need a liter. Maybe they don't need anything. And I think that's something all too often a lot of these protocols get put in, and we're just, give fluid, not looking at the patient and being a physician. And it's just interesting. And I think another thing that gets missed often, and I can't find the trial right now, is where they try to limit the total, it wasn't even in a protocol, but they're just trying to limit total intake of fluid. And then in a group of patients, and even when they're trying to limit the total intake of fluids, just with the extra, you know, 250 that gets hung up with their antibiotic, the extra another 250 that get hung up with their antibiotic at dinner, and would get hung up with their, you know, PPI and their all these 250 add-ons that would get added on, even when they were trying to limit the total volume. These patients were still having trouble staying under a liter a day, you know, under 1,500 a day, and that often gets forgotten in the patient's total volume that we're giving them.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I think that it goes back to an interesting point Dr. Shuck actually said the other day. He's like, you know, physical exam isn't that helpful on some things. It's just not. But I'm hoping that at some point, like he said, we're able to go in and we're... These protocols that are written for sepsis, septic shock, I don't want to be like, act like I'm smart and I know better than the protocol, but they were written for the lowest common denominator. They were written to make it so a dermatologist who's very smart, I'm sure, but doesn't work in an ICU setting could walk in and say, it looks like you meet criteria for A, therefore you get 30 cc's per kg. He might not know that because the protocol isn't implicit to stop it at some point, but he does know that that's what you do and you get it going. And I think that that's probably about, unfortunately, the people that are using, they're actually the nurses at bedside, maybe aren't educated in some institutions to the point where they know that that's just early. That's early goal-directed therapy. That's not lifetime. We don't keep them on that until they either die or leave the hospital, whichever comes first. But again, these protocols are written for people that probably aren't any of the guys we're talking about. I mean, a lot of these guys, they don't play by the rules necessarily because they know better. They actually understand the physiology, they understand their patients well enough,
right,
and they know what their interventions are going to do, and they just do what's best for the patient. And it will almost always fall within a guideline at some point.
Some point.
But they don't. That's not what they're worried about. They're not worried about checking boxes.
So let's just, a couple quick studies that kind of maybe show or kind of what we're thinking in our look at the literature about fluids and whether to give more or less or more. Kidney International, 2009, observational study, 618 patients with acute kidney injury. Fluid overload in this study was defined as 10% increase in body weight. You had 3.1 increase odds ratio for death if you were defined as being fluid overloaded. So more fluid equals death more often. Annals of Surgery, 2012, random control trial. There was a restrictive and standard fluid group, all going colorectal surgery electively. In the restricted group, they on average received just over 2,700 mLs. In the standard group, they received just over 5,300 mLs, so almost double there, and on the day of surgery. And then post-op day one, 500 versus 1,500 in fluids. Complication average, 1.2 in the restricted group, 2.1 in the standard group. And there's a whole list of what they consider to be complications, things like intubation, leakage of the rectum, pulmonary edema, renal failure, just a whole list of things that they have, but all complications that you don't want. So again, more fluid equals worse. And then just to kind of quote Critical Care 2008, however, a threshold may exist beyond which a perceived benefit of additional fluid therapy after resuscitation may contribute harm. And that was 2008, so we're talking 6 years ago now, and still I see so many physicians just pounding the fluids, thinking, no worries, we'll just give more fluids, more fluids, more fluids.
Yeah, and the worst part, I think, is that that mentality gets perpetuated because nobody, I mean, this is still such new and kind of undiscovered territory. There isn't really 100% consensus on one level of fluid. Like you said, it there is some level at which harm is achieved. Right. We don't know when that is because it's patient to patient. Like they're talking about it. That's why these conferences are so much better than reading a book. These people are talking about real life, not the rat studies that were done. that get debunked the next week when someone does a penguin study, which gets debunked when someone does an isolated, you know, as what Smart EM calls a Honda, the hypertensive, obese, non-compliant, diabetic, alcoholic patient. When you isolate all of them and they're septic, well, they're going to die more often, period. They're already at, they've already exhausted their reserves. And you get all that crap research out of the way, and you find quality research, and then guys that are doing it on a daily basis that say, yeah, this works. This is what we do. And that's the value of social media with, you know, or foam, with this kind of a topic. It's changing. It's still not absolute. It's not in stone. But these are definitely some of the best available evidence on what to do. There was a study done by a group of orthopedic surgeons. It's published in the Anesthesia and Analgesia, August 2007. It's a double-blinded study with ASA 1 to 3 patients, which were all a little bit older. They were over 50, or they weren't included. They were pretty much healthy. They weren't uncontrolled diabetics. They didn't recently get anything in antibiotics, or they weren't in heart failure. So these are pretty good, ideal patients, which is probably the reason why this worked so well. But they went with liberal fluids, meaning a median of 4,200 mLs with a range of 3,000 to 5,200 mLs versus a restrictive with a median of 1,700 mLs with a range between 1,100 and 2,100 mLs of fluid during their surgical window. So what they did, their actual guideline was that gave them 30 cc's per kg per hour while they were available to give fluids to.
Sepsis protocol.
Yeah, they went for early goal-directed therapy on people that weren't sick, that weren't volume-depleted, and ortho pulled it off. But only because those ortho knee, or total knee arthroplasties, that's 1 or 2 hours. Right. So again, we're back to the timeline, which we can discuss. So you can hit them hard early, or you can do whatever you're going to do, but do it early. And I think this is one of the weaker explanations of that. We've got another one we can talk about in just a second, but this study talks about improved, their outcomes were restrictive did not do as well. So it says liberal compared to restrictive intravascular fluid regimen may lead to significant hypercoagulability and a reduction in vomiting, but without differences in other recovery variables. So no dramatic change in recovery out of the PACU, home, etc. time, but basically, the patients survived and didn't bleed much, and they gave a gigantic amount of fluid to them. So if you have a patient come in that has no medical background, they don't have 100 diagnoses, they don't have more allergies than you have initials after your name, which is a really good filter. If you have a lot of initials and they have a lot of allergies, you probably belong together. But if you just have one or two, and they have maybe one allergy that they're not sure of, that's fine. They might actually be sick. And you can treat them and then street them. But these patients did really well, and I think that's what we can correlate that to. But if you hit heart failure patients and, you know, renal failure or end-stage COPD, diabetic, all these patients with too much fluid, you're going to end up with problems.
Right.
Which this trial doesn't unveil, but other trials have recommendations of 3 to 6 hours. That's the ideal time. We can hit them that early, and they'll do well. The main trial that I'm talking about is the newest publication comes out of May 22nd, 2014 in CHEST, and they talk about the Surviving Sepsis Campaign guidelines being used within the first 3 hours of sepsis resuscitation. And that's a small reduction in mortality. All right, so this is a cohort study, a retrospective cohort study. So obviously not ideal for determining causation or hard outcome of this is the therapy alone making this difference. But we can definitely take from it that there are some benefits to doing it early. And maybe we can extrapolate that to most of the benefit is found in only doing it early. I think that's the next step of, you know, logic. It might be, you know, it's not well backed up with other literature except for probably level C evidence of expert opinion from all of these guys like Dr. Myberg, Dr. Weingart. They would all recommend you don't continue to flood patients indefinitely with even what we call maintenance fluids, which for some people is up to 125 cc's.
it goes on forever. The amount of evidence, I guess, against conservative versus liberal. Another one, Journal of Intensive Care Medicine, 2013. And they looked at the average fluid balance over 24 hours in septic patients. And what was the outcome? What, you know, mortality is what they're looking at. Once again, a more positive fluid balance at 24 hours is associated with an increased risk of mortality. So, yes, you need to hit them hard, hit them early. And I think this is where I think maybe we might have our first contribution to foam or something that could get used out there. And it's called the Mike Tyson theory of fluids. And it goes a little something like this. So, Mike Tyson, for those of you who don't know, well, you better know, one of the probably best or greatest boxers of all time in his heyday. I mean, towards the end of his career, got a little weird. Yeah, but
most sensational for sure.
Right. And he had 50 professional matches. 24 of the 50 ended in TKO or knockout in the first round. Almost half of them in the first round. Talking about hit it hard and hit it early. But we all know he would fade out late. Only 32% of his fights went past the fourth round, and 5 of his 6 career losses came after the fourth round. So we need to give fluids like Mike Tyson. We need to hit him hard and hit him early. Get him in the first round, get him down, and then fade out late in the third, fourth round, past the fourth round. You should probably be knocking out your fluids. By knocking out, I mean stop giving them, because at that point, if you're still giving fluids, you're not doing benefit. You need to just start a presser or just stop giving fluids. Maybe the patient's already better and you just need to reevaluate.
Now, I thought you were going to say that the Mike Tyson theory was take a bite out of that patient's deficit early and just knock them off their game. And then you could do something later on if the match keeps going on, or you need to do, I don't know. But anyway, you're right. So fluids early. And then I think probably the wisest comments that I read on the topic while we were doing our investigating was in Chest in 2008, there was a great article that talked about the harms of fluids. And they said fluids that do not enhance perfusion will cause or exacerbate edema in lungs, heart, gut, skin, brain, and other tissues.
Everything.
So that's basically every place in the body we need to stay healthy gets edematous. And we know, like, the whole body is connected. Physiology gets aberrant when we start adding strong anions or normal saline or probably even LR at some point. But basically, if you're not improving their perfusion at some point, you're stopping it. And make sure you're staying in that wiggle room. You probably have a liter or so. I don't know. These guys say somewhere between a liter and a half and 2 liters, 2 to 4 liters. So I bet you're probably safe saying 3. That way you're not too early or too conservative. If you're not the early adopter and you're not the late adopter, you're that guy in the middle that's like, I've been doing that all along. You can probably give 3 liters then and be fine, and everybody will be like, oh, that's not bad. Yeah, nobody will be able to get too upset because you're not given 5 and you're not given 1. But direct your fluids towards the patient's illness or needs.
I agree. And limit them.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, if they're PO, just stop the fluids.
Right.
I don't care where they're going. If the patient's drinking a liter and a half, as long as they're not immediately shooting it out their bottom, you know, you're probably okay. They're probably going to, they're not going to be in the ICU most of the time, unless, I guess, it's DKA or something. But then for most of those people, once you do early goal-directed therapy, you can cut off the fluids. They'll be able to maintain as long as you control their nausea.
Agreed. I think that puts a solid wrap on this one. Touch a little bit on fluids from every angle. Anything else you can think of?
Man, I'm feeling thirsty. All this talk about salt water and everything else makes me want to go out to the ocean and just dive in and suck it in real quick and see what happens. Maybe we'll get that, what is it? There's some big infection that's creeping around our shores right now.
Anyways, that's the sign that you need, you're dehydrated. You need some fluids. We'll put an end to this one. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, at Andrew Bilt, B-U-E-L-T, and at MedQuestioning.
Yes.
All right. Until next time, keep the quest in questioning.
All right, guys. See you next time.